I'm hopeful, regardless of the outcome. Boost of positive energy without one. Sorry about the jab, I'm on a holy field. I'm bearing fruit, but demons tried to eat them like Yoshi meal. I pissed them off the Batman like Falcone deals. Jungle full of predators, I know how Mowgli feels. So I got the fire, refuse to live in fear. I can spot suppliers, eating fresh drugs. Call me private label.
Welcome to episode 168 of the Permaculture Pimp Cast, where Pimp stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only pimp cast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living. And today is going to be no different. So glad everybody is with me. Now, the Homestead Honey can't be here right now because she is in the process of healing. I'll get to that in a minute. This episode is always brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com. Turn that simp into a pimp. Bam! Heaven's Harvest, 10% off with promo code PERMA. Remember, source all of the stuff you can yourself. Everything you can't, check out Heaven's Harvest. And I'm telling you what, y'all, those seeds they got over there are the cats meow. Anyway, if you'd like to go check us out on a Fountain app, you can listen to all your other podcasts over there. You can triple up the speed if you like. And if you'd like to drop a derivation of Bitcoin on a playa, you can do it over there with an item called Sats or Satoshi. I can't ever get that right. You know the deal. So drop some SATs on a PIMP over there on the Fountain app if you would so desire. All right, not going to mess around, y'all, getting straight into the farm news. And I'm recording this a little bit earlier today, so I'm not going to have a download from Eric or Chef Snow. So, I'll have to let those guys later. Like I said, there's a lot going on today. And it's always a good day when there is a lot going on. It's better than not being busy. You dig? All right. So the farm news right off the bat, I had to, I'm going to cover a couple of things actually. So yesterday, one day a week, Michelle does her long ruck march. And let's see, last week it was 8 miles. And of course she's got a pretty heavy doggone rucksack on her. Last week it was 8 miles. The week before that it was 10 miles. And yesterday it was 12 miles. So she really did a number on her feet and also her hips. And so she's down there healing as I speak right now. So it's not that she doesn't want to be here, y'all. It's just I am making her, like in the morning chores this morning. Like, hey, trying to get her to look after herself, y'all, is nearly an impossibility. I'm like, look, stay here, rest your feet. She's got blisters. Her hips are killing her. And I'm telling you what, that woman is as hard as 3 times 9. I ain't kidding, y'all. And, you know, just making her stop. And I'm like, okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to take 2 of those grounding mats because we got like 4 of them around here. You're going to wrap one around your hips. And when she does that, she basically, you know, you got to kind of take off your pants to make it most effective. And then you're going to put one on your feet. So she's down there doing that. And I can't even believe she's actually listening to me. So, you know, she's got to be in pain when she's actually listening. And when you do, you know, activities like that, you got to give yourself time to rest. I mean, there's people in the past like Mike Mentzer and a number of others that have talked about the time you take to heal for these high strenuous activities is more important than the actual activity. So I finally got that beat into her head. So I am so glad she's down there healing up. Well, as she was doing that, I had a bunch of running around to do. Had to go hit our partners yesterday and go get, you know, chicken food for the week, which, you know, I got to do once a week anyway. So I got to do that. But then out of the blue, I get called to go pick up this solar thing that I'm going to be testing here before long. And these people reached out to me. They know that I'm a journeyman electrician with a lot of experience. And they reached out to me and said, hey, would you give this thing a shot? Take it for a test drive. Let us know what's up. So I had to go all the way down to Fletcher, North Carolina to go pick this thing up because whoever was working at the FedEx thing didn't want to deliver it because one box in this thing weighs about 120 pounds. So, yeah, I go to pick this thing up. And, of course, they got this young lady out there helping me. Very, very sweet, but she wasn't about to pick this thing up. So I had to, you know, put the big guns on it, as it were, to get this thing loaded in the back of the truck, which I did. And as I'm sitting there, so here's where I'm going with this. As I'm sitting there loading this thing up, thinking about the ergonomic way of doing this and not throwing my back out, I kind of strike up a conversation with this young lady, and I'm like, well, man, I heard they had a lot of layoffs over at UPS, man. I hope you guys ain't getting mixed up in that. And she says to me, now, keep in mind, folks, this was quite an ordeal to even get to the point where I could find my package. And she tells me, yeah, they're having something of a merger. As soon as I hear merger, I know that's not going to be a good thing, because whenever those things happen, it usually is going to be followed by a bunch of layoffs. And so that was the next sentence she said. She says, yeah, they're merging FedEx Ground with FedEx whatever. And a lot of the drivers are really on pins and needles wondering whether or not they're going to keep their jobs. And I could see a cross around her neck. So I was like, okay, well, it seems like I'm in good company. I'm like, man, I'm so sorry to hear that. And she says, yeah, these drivers, man, they're really kind of sweating bullets right now, wondering which ones are going to be on the layoff and which ones aren't. And so it took me right back to my days of working on my tools. So folks that don't know, the way it works whenever you're in any level of construction, for the most part, whether you're any of the building trades, for the most part, if you're a journeyman electrician or a journeyman carpenter, journey pipe fitter, you name it, what we do is that we basically work for contractors. And then when the job's over, you get laid off. Now, it's usually an unceremonious kind of layoff. They don't give you any warnings. They don't do anything. And it occurred to me while I was sitting here talking to her, not only, you know, my heart going out to all these people that are likely going to be unemployed, I was thinking, you know, every single time I've been on a layoff, which is every single time, because you're always working yourself out of a job, unless you have something of a maintenance job. And then, you know, that's a pretty good gig if you can get it. And I had it, and I gave it up, and people thought I was crazy when I did it. But as you're working yourself out of a job, it's just out of the blue one day. You kind of know it's coming, but you never know exactly when. They'll just hand you your layoff papers, and then, you know, you go on about it. There's some guys that take it pretty hard, especially the ones that just got into the IBEW or International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. And it always occurred to me. So it's been kind of universally understood that when you get a layoff, it just happens. But why am I supposed to give them 2 weeks notification when I decide I'm going to go to a new job? Sound a little bit unfair? I thought about this years ago, and so I kind of changed the script, just like I was talking to you the last time about Sam's Club. I'm like, you know what? Every single time I've given anybody a two-week notice, I get on the crap list of all the jobs nobody wants to do. If I say, look, hey, y'all, I'm about to bounce here in a couple of weeks and just, you know, giving you a heads up. Let's say it was a really good contractor or whatever, and I'm leaving before the time is done, or I got other options, whatever the case may be. Every single time, without question, there might be one exception I can think of, but for the most part, it was like every single time I did that, I was always given the jobs, the nastiest jobs that they weren't going to give anybody else. And so I'm like, okay, why is it cool for them to just lay you off unceremoniously without any expectation? I mean, it just happens. But I'm supposed to give them a two-week notice. So I kind of adopted that thing, you know, depending on how things were going with that contractor. For the most part, man, I'm going to drag up when I drag up. And that's what it is. I mean, I'm like, okay, if it's good for you to just lay me off whenever, then why can't I leave whenever I want? So as you can tell, I'm probably not the best person. I'm not the best person in the world if you want to hire, but I'm like, okay, if this is your standards, I'm going to apply those same standards to myself. So, and a lot of other people do the very same thing. So I will say also, I'm going to spend a little time on yesterday because, man, there was a strange phenomenon that happened pretty much all day long. And I think I came to the determination of what exactly happened this morning. Yesterday, y'all, I'm not going to kid you, it was the best day that I've had in as long as I can remember. And I'm like, why am I in such a fantastic mood? Now, I'm doing all the work I'm supposed to. I did the cold showers. I worked out. You know, my diet is getting into keto. And I'm at that point right now where, you know, you're in that shady place in keto where your brain's trying to get away from the glucose wagon and get onto the ketone wagon. And so your brain suffers a little bit, but I've been down this road before, so I know what to expect. And if anybody's wanting to do that sort of thing, you got to make sure you get your electrolytes and all that stuff in order. So I'm like, why do I feel like I am on top of the world? I'm praising the Lord all day. I'm doing the things I'm supposed to do. And I'm like, the only thing that I could really cite, Now, I'm generally in a good mood, but it was on steroids yesterday, y'all, and I couldn't figure out why. And then it occurred to me this morning as Michelle and I were out doing the chores. There was not a cloud in sight yesterday. Yeah, go ahead and call me conspiracy theorist, but I'm trying to put two and two together. I'm like, there was not a cloud in sight. There wasn't a chemtrail in sight. Beautiful weather. And it had been for a couple of days, or at least that day. And I'm like, I felt like a million bucks. I felt like I could go after Moby Dick in a rowboat and take the tartar sauce with me. And I'm like, okay, this morning as we're doing chores, it started off as a blue sky. As we're doing them, in the time it took to do them, we saw streaks in the sky, planes up there doing their thing. And in minutes, I mean, under an hour, it went from a blue sky to absolutely hazy. And it is right now. And I'm like, okay, is there a correlation to that? I don't know. If anybody else felt unusually, or if you've noticed this pattern, by all means, let me know. Billy at permapastorsfarm.com. I'd like to know, because I'm trying to put two and two together here. It was just a glorious day. Felt like a million bucks all day long, despite the fact that I should be in that keto flu zone. And I felt like a million bucks, but I couldn't explain it. And like I said, I think maybe the Lord kind of opened that up for me to see today. I don't know. I'm just curious, but there's also other things we're doing. There's this website, heard it in a podcast. And as you know, I'm all into this biohacking stuff. And I want to be able to give the best performance in all ways. And a lot of it's mental. And, you know, part of it is taking that little bit of time to be in my own thoughts, thank the Lord, and, you know, get rid of the negative thoughts, inoculate myself with the word. Like this morning, all the time doing the chores, I'm going through my next section of Bible memorization. And I'm doing it as I'm doing a very uncomfortable thing, which is walking these very, very heavy bales. I mean, some of these are definitely 40 pounds, and I'm walking them up the side of the mountain. But at the same time, I'm mentally doing my Bible memorization. And then plus, I'm also looking at it as a workout. But there's this other hack that I threw into it, and I heard it on a podcast, and I'm like, okay, let me give it a test drive here. I called them up, and they were actually very, very receptive. And I was trying to get more indication. Now, what it is FLFE.net. So that's Foxtrot Lima, Foxtrot Echo.net, N-E-T. And you go there, you can set it up. You can do this 15-day free trial. You set up your phone, or you can set up your property, your whole property with this thing. And supposedly they have a machine up in Canada. And the way I understand it is this, it works. Now, this is kind of getting woo-woo on me, but basically it works in the quantum realm. And it eliminates a lot of the signals that may be coming onto your property. You know, you can see within this narrow band, your eyesight, your hearing is a very, very narrow band of what's available out there. Well, apparently, to hear them tell it, they work on another realm, and they're so confident about it that they'll give you a 15-day free trial, and you can go over there and check it out. You have these boosts that you can run for a period of day and, you know, period throughout the day. And apparently all of the transient nonsense that's going in the air, whether it's Wi-Fi, whether it's 5G or whatever, supposedly it eliminates that or brings it down to nothing. So I said, okay, let me give this thing a shot. So I signed up my property, and I'm in the middle of it right now. And I'm like, okay, does this have anything to do with this fantastic mood? I don't know, but I'm giving it a shot, and I'm doing that 15-day free trial. And I'll let you know if anybody else gives it a shot, let me know how it works for you. FLFE.net. And I'm not quite sure how it works, and we will definitely let you know one way or the other. But if anybody else wants to give it a shot, let me know how it's working out for you. Definitely email me. Maybe I can get these folks on the show and talk more about what exactly it does, because I'm not entirely sure. But if anybody's talking about eliminating the Wi-Fi, not just the Wi-Fi, because we got local ways to mitigate that, whether it was through Shungite on our phones or whether it's Shungite on the necklaces I wear and Michelle wears, or, you know, whether it's some of the other mitigation strategies that we have around here. In addition to that, if there's anybody out there saying that they can, you know, enhance that, well, I'm definitely going to shoot for, you know, finding out what that is and giving it a test drive. So let me know. All right, other farm news. We made some extract, and this one was more difficult because it was on the side of a mountain. I had to literally walk this stuff up there, pump the water up to it, and now we're pumping this extract in one of the worst places in terms of, in terms of awful growth. You know, you go in there, you use your animals to wipe out a place, and you get it off and running. And then, folks, if you don't stay on top of it, trust me, or if you overdo it, let's say you run your pigs in there and you don't just massage the landscape, but you scalp it, you're going to get it even worse than you did the first time. So the area where we had the pigs go through, then the sheep go through, and then we went through and cleared it out, we're hitting it now with compost extract. Now, there is a difference. We've talked about it before between extract and compost tea. Let me just kind of put this in a nutshell for you. Extract is designed to permeate the soil. Okay. But you hear everybody talk about compost tea. The difference is compost tea, as you got it in your bubbler and before you send it out, you basically are, you're reproducing the organisms, the beneficial organisms in there. It's a little tricky. I don't advise it for most people because you kind of need to know what you're doing there with a microscope, because you could go anaerobic. You're giving them food before you set them out. And the idea is with the extract is that it's more like a foliar spray. It's meant to take all those beneficial organisms, and instead of just having them down in the soil, which is awesome, you're putting it on top and you're getting it onto the leaf structure. Well, we ain't in the spring yet, so we don't have any leaves. It doesn't make sense to put down tea when we don't have any leaves for it to really stick to. So right now we're sticking to the extract, and that's exactly what we're working on. I mean, all these really, really problem spots, the place where we've had that silver grass, thorns, thistles. Look, I can get into the weeds on this, but there's no need to. Look, if you see thorns, thistles, awful things out there, 9 times out of 10, your soil's jacked up. I mean, I'd say almost 10 times out of 10. If you have unwanted species that you don't have out there, try the extract, but you got to have good compost and try that and see how it works for you. So we're doing a lot of that stuff right now, and we're seeing, you know, we're trying to really, really ramp it up before spring gets upon us. And we're going to hope and pray. That's the most important thing. And folks, I'm not kidding about that. Pray over your property, pray over everything, but also, you know, don't be so heavenly minded that you know earthly good. You got to get out there and put work on it. So you can do it with the animals alone, but man, we're kicking it up way, way up by using, you know, taking all of this fertility in the form of hay, putting down a thick mat of that, and favoring our beneficial insects and our beneficial life forms that are down in the soil. And that's what the extract is designed to do. All right. So let's, hey, y'all pray for me, and I'll be praying for you as well, because we do. That, you know, this great mood continues. I mean, man, it's just fantastic. So I'm right there right now. I'm a little bit hungry, doing a little bit of fasting right now, intermittent fasting, along with getting over that keto flu. So it's going to be a little bit of a compromise here and there. Speaking of compromise, I am constantly, folks, this has been one of the biggest game changers as of late. Want to give a shout out to David Goggins for making me aware of it. And it's something that seems like common sense, but I'm just going to reiterate it again. And I am doing better and better and better of not compromising with myself. What do I mean by that? Specifically, what I'm getting at is, you know, you got a task you got to do, and you keep putting other tasks in front of it. This is what I'm famous for. Knowing full well that you still got to do what it is you don't want to do. Now I'm getting better, and I'm convincing myself to do those, and this is Tony Robbins 101, do those uncomfortable, hard tasks first. I know it seems like common sense, but we do it all the time, and I know I'm bad at it. But every time I get in that mindset where I'm going to do it, I keep telling myself, nope, no compromise. You're not going to compromise with that side of yourself that's telling you, put it off, put it off, put it off. And I'm getting better and better at it, y'all. So I'm going to encourage, maybe it isn't a biohack, but I'm going to call it one, is that I'm finding myself being way more efficient and having way more joy just by getting those uncomfortable things you don't want to do out of the way up front and right out front. All right, we don't have anything from Pastor Lon. Like I said, he's taking something of a sabbatical right now. I ask everybody to pray for him. Like I said, preachers, pastors, good ones especially, look, folks, especially ones that don't have an entire team behind them doing all this work, it's one of the most thankless jobs out there. And you get wore down and beat up when you do it. But most people don't think of you until disaster strikes or hard times come. And then in addition to all the other things you have to do everything everybody else is doing. So y'all pray for your pastors out there. Pray for Pastor Lon. Like I said, this is a job where you are constantly put upon and it wears you down. So just keep that in mind. So love and blessings as always to Pastor Lon, Miss Robbie and their family. And before we get into the good news, I want to remind you right now, as I speak, I talked about Michelle with her feet on that grounding mat. Well, as I'm recording right now, my bare feet are on one of those Redemption Shield mats right now. And I'm trying to be way more conscious of grounding as often as I can because we're being bombarded in every direction possible. So as quickly as it's hitting me, I'm trying to discharge it right through this grounding mat from Redemption Shield. They got a lot of other stuff like grounding sheets and stuff like that. And I highly recommend them. We sleep on them every single night, discharging as often as I possibly can. So go to redemptionshield.com, use promo code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. That'll get you 10% off. So I'm going to jump right into the good news here. And I know my good news is a little bit weird from time to time, but this one I think is especially good. And check this one out. So Harvard, this is from badscience.com. Dig this. Harvard controversy saga continues. University diversity, equity, and inclusion officer apparently plagiarized husband's academic work. Now, why is that good news? Because so many of us think that just because a person has credentials or because they have college behind them or because they have an advanced degree from one of these highfalutin universities, we dispense with our own understanding. That's called an appeal to authority. There's a lot of other fallacious arguments I could add to that, but that's chief among them. I'm glad to see that in these Ivy League schools, that maybe it might be working on the minds of a lot of people to realize that just because this person has PhD or MD, look, y'all, some of the biggest dummies on this planet are PhDs, MDs. In fact, I remember when I was in college, there was a guy teaching a class, wicked smart, had a master's degree, and he insisted that he would never go after a PhD because he insisted that it would make him stupid. At the time, I didn't understand what he said. I didn't understand until much later with, you know, more self-education and with a lot of experience being around a whole lot of doctors. Believe me, as a journeyman electrician, I worked around a lot of doctors. I even had a 5-year gig in a maintenance contract at the VA hospital in Leavenworth, Kansas. Met a lot of these doctors, and there was only one of every doctor there that I even considered to be mildly intelligent. I'm not saying that they're all doctors are stupid, because there are some exceptions out there. And, you know, I've known a doctor, and I've talked about him before, had more degrees than a thermometer, but didn't have any common sense. So, folks, what I'm saying here is that it seems like the veneer of places like, of all these Ivy League schools, you know, you had the dean, she just got busted, and now we got the DEI inclusion person now busted, and it's all, you know, the veneer hopefully is waning away from these people. Remember, these things mean nothing. The most, folks, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say it with a great deal of authority from my position. The most intelligent people I've ever known in my life never even finished high school. What does that tell you? So Mark Twain wrote a lot about the difference between education and knowledge. People like John Taylor Gatto have talked a great deal about this very thing and how historically it was done in the one-room schoolhouse. Folks, if you doubt me, read some of the letters from the guys that were in the Civil War. They had like a fourth or fifth grade education. Look at the prose. Look at their ability to communicate. Look at all these things they had that are all but gone from our modern society. And it was all done out of that one-room schoolhouse. So I would highly encourage you to check out the work of probably the greatest public school teacher of all time, and that was John Taylor Gatto. G-A-T-T-O, John Taylor Gatto. And he's got a really good series. You probably got to speed it up because he had had a stroke before then. It's called The Ultimate History Lesson with John Taylor Gatto. It takes a while to unfold, but believe me, it is absolute gold. And he covers a lot of what I'm talking about right here. A lot of other people I could cite you to as well. All right, next one. Ludicrous. 28 attorneys general deride New York Attorney General call to end ammunition manufacturing at Lake City in Missouri. Okay, that's good news to me. I mean, I know we got politically a lot of bad news going on, but at the state and local county city levels are where you're really going to make any difference. It's not going to be at the national level. And that's why I'm saying, even when it comes to your own personal level, you got to be thinking about this stuff. How can I make the biggest difference? Well, it's going to be in the things you can reach out and touch, the people around you, the people you interact with, maybe the people you work with. But it's good to see that this is one of those things that's actually, you know, more and more, you know, all these other people sided with Texas, which, by the way, I'm a little bit opaque about. I'll say it that way, because I'm not so sure that's not just a giant setup down there as well. But to see the sentiment of the people out there getting along and moving on board. And of course, you got the mainstream media trying to, you know, reshape the whole thing down there like they do with everything. And it's good to see people ain't buying it. All right. Third good news article. Let's see here. This one is nine ways to feed your chickens for free, folks. You know, this is my wheelhouse. And I'm going to cover some of the ones here because I haven't really gone in detail about them before. Some of the others you've heard me talk about. Now, one is Eric Sider does a lot of this specifically on his YouTube channel. So I go to encourage you to go check out his version of the chicken tractor on steroids. So one of them is feed back their eggshells. You can do that, but I would highly suggest that you boil them first. Works better. Some people take extra eggs. This is another tactic where you can take the extra eggs and you boil them and then you feed them back. I'm kind of so-so about that. I mean, that's one of the last things I do. To me, it's a little bit like cannibalism. I know that nobody has any evidence. It's just, you know, inside me just doesn't feel like the best way to go about it. Some of it is garden rejects, okay? All the funny shaped stuff that might look a little bit weird and different, you might want to give it back to them. Weeds and yard waste, that goes without questioning. Starting a grazing box. Now, that's a really good strategy where the chickens can't actually get in there and scratch, and you're almost doing it like microgreens. So they get in there, they kind of extract what they want, and then they move on. You can grow a chicken garden, and you can even have them go through the garden that you just harvested. That's also a really good strategy as well. A lot of people miss putting carbon down when you do that, and I think that's pretty critical. Compost pile, well, chicken tractor on steroids 101 right there, because that's really where they're deriving most of their protein, and it's actually a much, much better protein in my view. So finally, a maggot bucket. Yeah, that's one way to go about it. Or you could do soldier fly larva. That's another way to go about it. I mean, there's a lot of really great strategies in which you can go about doing a lot of this stuff. And it works really, really, really well. All right. Like I said, it's too early to get a download from Eric. And I'm just going to go ahead and replay the one from last week because it was fire.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, let's redefine wealth. Wealth is typically defined in terms of money and finance. As Chris Rock says, you can't get rid of wealth. Rich, you can lose in a crazy summer with a drug habit. Wealth is having so much money that you can't even spend the interest. This is what most people aspire to. I prefer Jeff Lawton's definition of wealth. An abundance of clean air, an abundance of clean water, an abundance of clean, nutrient-dense, locally grown food, an abundance of sensible housing, an abundance of warmth, friendship, and community. This is true wealth. This is how we prioritize the health of the planet, which naturally leads to the health of people. I would say most of our problems began when humans saw themselves as separate from nature, which leads to thoughts of superiority, domination, and control. Any strategy promoted by those in control are those strategies that allow them to maintain control. Regenerative agriculture is no solution if it maintains centralized control. Permaculture design is about many small systems working together, with no central power structure and no dominion over the whole. There is security in diversity. There is security in multiple small systems. This is how we create abundance for all and a truly wealthy society. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. And if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
That's my dog right there, y'all. Like I said, I felt the need to replay it because it's, I mean, everything Eric does in terms of his thoughts of the day, his tip of the day, honestly, are just downright fire. Because every single time I hear it, I'm like, man, I could have done a whole show about that. I really need to get him back on and we, you know, ham over some of these things. Probably the main topic that I'm going to go over today and just get his take on it, just seeing it from another designer's point of view. All right, before we get into the main topic, y'all, EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Look, the number one threat on your life and your house is going to be lightning strikes. Anything gets downstream, bam, they cover you 25 G's over at EMPShield.com. Promo code PERMA, like I said, will get you $50 off. All right, so we talked about it before, and the 12 principles of permaculture. If you haven't listened to the previous program, I highly advise you to go back because these are the things that are missing. In a nutshell, right out of the bat, remember, right off the bat, before you examine any further in permaculture, think about that prime directive. Take immediate ownership of yourself, your family. In other words, the way you would say it in the Army, be responsible for everything your family does and fails to do. Just keep that in mind. That's basically the prime directive. And when we get into the ethics, earth care, people care, and abundance given to the previous two. I've talked about the four principles last week, so I won't cover that again, but I'm going to get into the next ones. And they're every bit, and each one you'll see if you examine it, cogitate, you know, meditate on it a little bit, you'll realize each one kind of rides into the other. There's no one without the other. So the next four, five through eight, is basically going to be use and value renewable resources and services. Y'all, what do you think that book, Scrapsteading, that I wrote was about? It's exactly that thing. So you do it on every level, but also think about how you can do it. You know, we tend to think permaculture is everything outside, but think about the things inside your house. How much plastic could you reuse? I remember I worked with this old timer named Newt when I first got into the electric trade, and that dude would wear out a Ziploc till there was no Ziploc left. And it was weird because he would eat pretty much the same thing every day. And every single day, man, you'd see these Ziplocs, man, they were just down. He's like, look, man, all I need is a container. There ain't no sense in throwing this thing out. So 100 baggy of Ziplocs, man, he'd use that thing over and over and over again. So he would use that thing inside and out. What about the other things in your house? Michelle, I used to dog her because it reminded me of my grandma. She would drink tea and have these tea bags. Well, one thing my grandma would always do was take these tea bags. When she would go to somebody's house, she'd bring her own tea bag, and it was always wrapped up in aluminum foil. The aluminum foil was reused over and over and over again. Probably not the best thing in the world with the benefit of hindsight. And that tea bag was used over and over and over again. You can do that. So use and value those renewable resources, things that you can use over and over, and then find ways in which you can extricate yourself from even using them at all. So instead of using Tupperware, is there glass, you know? Plus, there ain't no telling how many microplastics. I mean, that's one of the things we're constantly working on trying to get away from, especially all these plastics out there, even if it is void of BPA or bisphenol A, which, by the way, ain't helping your libido any. Even if you can remove all that, try to find ways. It does require a little bit more out of you when you do this stuff. But think of that, use and value renewable resources inside your home as well. And like I said, in the book Scrapsteading, that's exactly what we get into. I do it from my end. Matt does it from his. Next one, produce no waste. Okay, like I said, these things build on each other. Chicken tractor on steroids is the primary way that I'm talking about it. Is there any waste in that system? Are there other systems out there that, and I'm going to kind of go chicken heavy on that because that's something everybody can relate to. Chicken tractor on steroids, you're taking all the food scraps and you're putting them into that pile, that 1 week compost pile. If you want to know what I'm talking about, go to our YouTube channel. We probably have more videos on that than anybody else on the planet. And just to give kudos to whom it's due, Jeff Lawton, the pimp daddy of permaculture himself, really invented this system. And all we did was just take it, expand it, and then try to find the limits. The only limit that I know in that system is that you almost certainly can't use Cornish crosses in there. Every other bird we've done. But in that system, you're producing zero waste. What are you getting out of this system? Well, you're getting the chickens. Obviously, if you want to extract some out of there and process them and eat them, that's fine. You're getting eggs out of the system if you have layers in that system. It could be a meat bird system, or it could be dual-purpose birds that you have in that system. What you're finding is not only are you producing all of your needs in that compost, you're producing, depending on which model you use, Eric Sider has a really good example of what he's doing there on a more suburban level. You can scale this thing up or down depending on how you're using it, but there is zero waste in it. That's why I'm saying it is the most consequential system on this planet, especially at this time where things are going through the roof. What about your animal manure? Folks, you've heard me talk about this so many different times, especially in the YouTube channel, where homesteaders are either the best thing that ever happened to the landscape, or we're the worst. And I've gone about this. If you are figuring out, if you're asking yourself, what do I do with this manure? You got too many animals out there. If you're living in a moonscape, you got too many animals out there. So depending on your system, let's say you're raising pigs and you do it like Jason from Sow the Land, and you put them in a antiseptic kind of location where they're getting all their needs met, but there's no waste even in that system. If you're producing waste out of that system and you don't know what to do with it, you probably got too many animals. All right, next one. Design from pattern to detail. Now, there's a bunch of different ways. A spider web is usually what is generally used for this. I'm going to say it in another way, and I'm going to copy basically Stefan Subkoviak's way of communicating this. In terms of designing, you want to look at, now, this is very, very important because, like I said, homesteaders, your zoning and your designing is probably what's hindering you the most. And I beat this in the videos, and I try to talk about it as often as I can in the podcast. What you want to do in this design from pattern to detail section, what Stefan says, you zoom in and then you zoom out. You zoom in and then you zoom out. So if you're looking at things from a macro view, when you're designing your homestead, you're going to see it a certain way. But you're going to find out that when you get in closer, like instead of looking at the entire orchard, maybe you want to focus on that tree for a moment and the guild around it. Maybe you want to focus in a little bit more and think about those particular things in the guild. Like, hey, is my placement of these gooseberries on the south side of that tree, or should it be on the north side? Which way is it going to benefit, east or west? And then you zoom back out, look at the whole thing, and then you zoom back in. If you're doing it from one perspective or the other entirely, probably not going to see a whole lot of creativity in that model, and you're probably going to have a lot of loss. So make your mistakes on paper, think it through, because once you plant, it's not like an animal where, you know, hey, you know what? Chickens ain't doing so good over here. I can move them over there. It's not like that. When it comes into systems like this, as far as overall design, you got to zoom in and zoom out as often as you possibly can. So that one, like I said, every single one of these, y'all, builds on the other, and they work synergistically with the others. And then finally, integrate rather than segregate. Going back to Stefan also, he talks about, you know, many hands make light work. Yeah, that's generally true a lot of times, but in my experience, it depends on how it's going down, y'all. I tend not to get a bunch of people to do anything because I've seen it over and over and over again that when you have a building project, what typically happens is a lot of conversation. A lot isn't being done. And that's one of the things that it's hard for me to reconcile. Look, you got a bunch of, if I'm out there helping somebody, folks, you'll notice, and I am putting foot to butt every step I can. I don't want to be that person that's like standing back. It's one thing to have a conversation here and there, but you'll find out that when you do that, and folks, I don't know how to say this politely, but there's more conversation happening than work getting done. So there's a way of balancing that and how to communicate that to the people out there that are doing the work. I'm not quite sure how that gets done. I know people are effective at it, but I haven't yet been able to crack that nut. So every element within this has other functions as well. Once again, going back to your design. Okay, do you have your chickens? People will go out there and say, I'm going to put the chickens over here. But they haven't given one thought about what are the needs of these chickens. And this is the way it's done in the designer's manual in permaculture, and it's beautiful. There's like the chickens in the center, and you have all of its inputs, and all of the things that it gives. And when you look at that, it is absolutely sublime. That's just chickens. You can do the very same thing for every animal, every plant you have on your homestead. You can say, okay, what does it need? What does it require? And then you situate that animal or that plant in the place where it can do that very thing. Folks, going right back to the gill that I was talking about in your orchard. Even in your garden, Jeff Lawton does a masterful job, as only Jeff can, talking about how you integrate all these things where you get the bug benefits of, let's say, a marigold, but you get the nitrogen capturing benefits of something, let's say, like clover or some other nitrogen fixer. Folks, we're walking around here in an atmosphere that's, what, 78, 79% nitrogen? And we wonder why. I mean, think about this. You're walking around with nitrogen. Go out in the forest and see how the nitrogen fixers are fixed out in that healthy forest. And I mean a healthy one. And you'll find out that nobody's out there giving fertilizer to nature. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't need to happen because nature fixes all these things and situates it. That's why you want to go out there, go into zone 5, and see how it's being done, and you carry it back to your place. And what you'll find is, once again, integration rather than segregate. We don't put monocrops. Nature does not, you will not see the good Lord situate monocrops for the most part. It doesn't happen. The only times that happens is with man or woman's integration. Think about this. Integration rather than segregate. That's why we have our nitrogen fixing trees every third tree, y'all. Bill Mollison was a freaking genius. This is why in all levels of that food forest, we have a nitrogen fixer in close interaction with the other trees around it. So it's taking that beautiful nitrogen that we have in our air that, you know, they're telling them over. I mean, this is almost laughable if it weren't tragic. What's happening right now over in the Netherlands where they're saying nitrogen's bad. Yeah, you can get too crazy with it, but they have ways of mitigating those things. That's why they've been so incredibly productive in the Netherlands, because they did have pretty reasonable ways of dealing with the excess nitrogen. So think about this. Going right back to our food forest, we have a nitrogen fixing tree, and that could be anything that works well in your place. Nitrogen fixing shrubs, every single layer, all seven layers have a nitrogen fixing element, and they're in close proximity to the trees that do exceptionally well when you put them in close proximity. All we're doing is seeing what the good Lord did out there and replicating it on our place. Can it apply to your pastures? Absolutely, and it should. Okay, do you have clover in your pasture? Greg Judy talks about this probably more than anybody. And the benefit of having that nitrogen-fixing element, if you just stand back, graze properly, you'll see those guys pop up exactly where they need to be. So once again, integration rather than segregation. It works beautifully because you don't see anybody having to go out there and fertilize a healthy forest or a healthy pasture. It doesn't happen. And if you just take what nature's out there doing and replicating it on your homestead, you're going to find out that it is fire, y'all. That's all we're doing. So take these 12 principles. I'll go into the next 4 next week. So hopefully that was a blessing to you. All right, so we're going to get into the Q&A section. But before we do that, like I said, it's too early to get a download from Chef Snow. Do want to remind you, another sponsor of the show, the TexasBoys.com. They got that Fearless podcast, and it is balling. So go check them out. All right, so we're going to get into Q&A. And right now we got one here from Lewis. It says, just watched your video about using guardrails for gravel road drainage. Where did you find yours? I live in Columbia, South Carolina, having similar drainage problems, but haven't been able to find those things. Well, I'll tell you where we get them. We just chop them off the side of interstates, just getting some of that text. No, I'm just kidding. Some of your mom and pop, you're not going to find it at Tractor Supply, but your mom and pop kind of farm stores, they have those. At least they do around here. So go check those out. They have them in varying lengths, and they sell them by the foot where I am. So be sure to go check that out. All right, we got another one from Rachel. Hello, my husband and I are building our permaculture homestead from scratch with raw land and no structures outside of Greenville, South Carolina. We've cleared land with just chainsaws in our hands, and we've created roadway. Okay, sounds like you're doing things right off the bat. They're asking about a consultation. We always recommend that you, if you want a remote consultation, look, folks, everybody I know that's gone with Eric Seider, Eric Seider, spelled Seider.com. He can do a ballin' remote remote consultation for you. Over in Texas, my son William's over there. Go check him out at thepermacultureconsultant.com, I believe. If you're out that way, you want an in-person thing, I think he's gearing up to do some more remote stuff. But Eric is the man and all that stuff. So go check him out. We always have his contact information down below. We don't really do them anymore. We really don't have the bandwidth to do them. But it sounds like you're doing what you ought to do when you start. If you're doing it from raw land, y'all, remember Eric Seider's shirt. You can get it at Eric Seider at his YouTube channel and also over at his website. What is it? Water Access Structures. Sounds like they're off and running and doing exactly what you ought to do when you start a project. Okay, this one here says, will your bone saws work if I put this on a wooden dowel and place it in the ground in the center of my irises? The deer and the elk eat everything at my place, even plants that can be toxic. Clive, chives, onions, lavender, sage. And that's coming from Mindy. Well, I'm going to tell you, Mindy, that when it comes to bone saws, and I want to tell everybody else out there, it was originally designed to be put on trees, to work in your food forest and your orchard settings. Now, has it been adapted to work in garden settings? Yeah, a lot of people have done it and have had great success. Others say it hasn't worked for them. Now, I have had other people go out there, mix it up with water, throw it in the yard, and then wonder why it's not working. That is not the way to do it, and hopefully we'll do more videos. I just don't want any gratuitous videos of the things we sell. This stuff pretty much sells itself. It's not a panacea. It doesn't work 1,000% of the time, but it is without a doubt the best out there. We've tried everything you can imagine, and the only thing that works better than bone sauce is putting pictures of Hillary Clinton out there, because everything knows in nature, even Sasquatch won't come around. They know that this woman will murder everybody. So, well, just all kidding aside, what people have done and what we've done is we've taken wooden stakes and put it out there at first before we were, you know, got hot and heavy on this stuff. And it works great. And it did work great. And then we felt comfortable putting it on our woody things, and it worked great. Other people say they haven't had the same amount of success, but I guarantee this stuff works better than putting bars of soap on your tree or any other strategy, whether it's urine, you name it. We've tried it all. They've been using it for 1,000 years, according to Sepp Holzer over in places like Germany and Austria. And all we did was take it, make it much, much stronger, and jarred it up and sold it. So some people have had great success. Back to your question, they've had great success, and other people claim that it worked for a while, then it didn't. You know, it's all up to you. You can try it. I would put stakes around it. The areas where we've done it before, we've actually taken things like engineer tape or this flat ribbon called mule tape, M-U-L-E. And you can get it at electrical supply houses. People have coated that in bone sauce, surrounded their gardens with it, and it worked like a champ. We've had people locally that have taken their cornfields, a monocrop, and you know, put it around there. They've had incredible success. So yeah, you'll have to play with it and see. I really don't know what else to tell you. Now, we've had people reach out and say, man, I live up in Alaska, kept the moose away. You're just going to have to give it a shot. I know this stuff is expensive, but it is a big time labor just to make it. Hopefully that was a blessing to you. All right, y'all, everybody, blessings to you and yours out there. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive. They don't want an individual, just a carbon copy. You sitting at Manicotti, yeah, I'm talking saucy. All they want to build is a prison world full of pet Tamagotchis. Like a kamikaze, got me out of body like I'm Goku SS3. They want to push me to the center like a cell. They want to spin up at the center of the nexus, me. They want me to battle, but I'm a warrior, I'm a warrior. I will never bow down, 'cause I'm a warrior, I'm a warrior. They want me to bow down, but I'm a warrior.